Sloppy Spoilers with your host, DT2. Hello and welcome to Sloppy Spoilers. I'm your host, David Taylor II. You know me as DT2 Comics Chat on Twitter. Tonight we're going to be talking about episodes 9 and 10 of season 2 of the Umbrella Academy. So this is our concluding podcast for season 2. I'd like to welcome my co-host. Welcome to David Nemesis Howard. How you doing and where can we find you on Twitter?
Hey everyone, glad to be here. You can find me at NemesisFC2 on Twitter, and I am ready to finish this season up because we have plans for what we're going to do next, and looking forward to finishing this one up and moving on.
Welcome to Steve Shadewing Sellers. How are you doing, and where can we find you on Twitter?
Doing pretty well. Kind of glad to finally get to the end of Umbrella Academy. It's been a long, winding road through Dallas. And I'm on. You can find me on Shadewing on Twitter.
And welcome to Jeff, Dr. Fade Bracey. How you doing, Jeff? And where can we find you on Twitter?
I am fantabulous, sir. And you can find me at Bracey 452 on Twitter. That's at Bracey 452. Now let's go kill Kennedy.
Now the one thing spoilers kept in. As we review these last two episodes, is the big question for me was it worth it? So what we're going to be talking about in both segments is, do we feel like the payoff has been worth what we've been following during the season? That's what I want us to focus on. So we're going to talk about season 2, episode 9 first. That episode is entitled 743. Now, that episode is pretty much the wrap-up about three-quarters of the arcs, and it's also got arguably the biggest reveal of the entire series so far. So it starts off with them trying to get to Vanya, because, of course, Vanya has spazzed out, and no one's able to approach her, so they're all trying to cut through the psi wave of her powers. Only Ben can do it because Ben's a ghost. Ends with a very poignant goodbye scene while Luther and Old Five and Young Five are outside teleporting and fighting. Vanya also seems to be psychically still tied to Harlan. He seems to be experiencing what she is experiencing. And then, of course, Harlan and Sissy try to get away. Harlan uses his powers and basically puts a bullet in his chest. And Luther has to decide which five is D5 that's going to help. And he picks what I'll call Young Five or the Five we know. Ben seems to be able to talk Vanya out of her enraged state so the white violin doesn't have to come out. But it comes at a cost because for some reason, this interaction makes Ben derez and he actually becomes an actual ghost, or maybe he goes over to the other side where ghosts belong and finally gets to leave this plane. And Lila finds out the truth, supposedly, about her origin. And of course, the biggest reveal, I'll save for a minute because we got to talk about that. and so that's pretty much, because we're going to save that big one until later. That's pretty much what happens. The handler takes care of her opposition well, as usual. So I want to know, you know, like how you felt. Again, the issue here is, was it worth it? So let's start with. Well, let's start at the end because I know we're itching to talk about it. So we'll just go right on and talk about it and we'll work backwards like we did last time. So the biggest reveal is, of course, that Hargreaves is an alien. Holy cow. Now, if you didn't read the comics, this is your first awareness of that. You might have suspected a couple of things, but this confirms that he's an alien in disguise because he zips off his head mask and you see the back of his completely alien head. And he goes on, the reason he got angry is because the Majestic 12 deceived him from start to finish, and he actually did not agree to the assassination of JFK. But they're like, you know, this is what's happening, and if you don't like it, too bad. And they threaten him, and he said, are you going to threaten me, huh? The man pulls his head off, and we don't get to see what he does, but we get to hear what he does, and it puts him ugh and ugly. So I want to hear your thoughts about that. Do you think that reveal, that payoff, was worth it based on what we've known about Hargreaves up to this point? Start with Bracy.
Okay, I have not read The Umbrella Academy, so this was a terrific surprise for me. And like you said, I suspected a lot of things about Hargreaves, but not him being an alien. So I was like, whoa, this was a big holy cow moment. And it also crystallized a lot of things. You get this and you go like, oh, now so many things make sense. So very, very many things like make sense. Like why he has trouble forming emotional bonds, why he wants nothing to do with children, why he's so purpose-driven and scientifically minded. Yeah, man, like that was so cool. And then for me, this particular payoff. Now I won't say the final scene of the show. That wasn't a good payoff for me. But I'm sure we'll get into that. But like this, I thought this was a great reveal. I thought it was a really fun twist. It does precisely what you want a moment like this to do. I want to know more. So of course I'm going to be back for next season because I got to see where this is going to go now. Although I do have to worry, wonder about the Majestic 12, when Hargreaves was, you know, leaving. He's like, you know, gentlemen, don't contact me anymore. And they turn around and like, oh, no, you're going to keep making technology for us, or we're going to tell people who you really are. And it comes to me that apparently they didn't know who he really was, but they sure found out. So, you're like, even the super secret Illuminati style organization, apparently they weren't totally in the know on things. So there's more to be explored there as well. So yeah, terrific reveal. I loved it. Can't wait for more.
Well, my thoughts on it, very briefly, it did what I love to see in shows, which is change everything that you know and escalate. Mm. It did both at the same time. So all mm-hmm. of a sudden it has a retroactive effect. And now you look at everything he's done differently because it changes everything. But this now escalates everything we've seen because his motives have never been human. And everything we thought about him being a darker version of Professor X or Niles Calder, it is not that. It's something else entirely. And so like you, I'm like, okay, I have to see what happens now. Even if I don't care about anything else, I got to see what goes on with this. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I would generally agree with all of that for the most part. There is one kind of thing that kind of brings it down, but it has nothing to do with the scene itself. But I will get a little bit into that. In terms of the way that the scene was played out, it was really great. It got me riveted. I'm like, okay, you know, he takes off his face and starts eating these people. And I'm like, I really enjoyed that because these guys deserved it. They really did. You know, between, you know, killing Kennedy and all the things that they were doing and then, you know, trying to basically blackmail Hargreaves. It's interesting to see that Hargreaves balks morally at doing this. You know, whether it's for his own morality or because of his own motivations is not clear. But it's nice to see that, you know, there's a point where even Hargreaves says, yeah, that's something I'm not willing to do. And you guys can go screw yourselves. And so that was a really, really nice moment. The one thing that brings it down for me is not the scene itself, which is great. But the fact that after this moment where you start seeing a little bit of I don't want to say humanity exactly because we're dealing with somebody who's not human, but somebody that has a little bit of a conscience. The start of the next episode then goes back to him being a complete douchebag at the funeral of Ben. So it's like you end it with this really great note where we start to see a little bit of humanity in a way, and then they just take it, you know, pull the rugs away later on, which I just thought that was a total mistake. But in terms of the particular scene itself, it's brilliantly executed. I mean, I loved everything about it.
You're right. That was a weird transition when you think about it.
Well, one of the most common tropes in sci-fi, fantasy, and comic books is the almost human character. Mm-hmm. And our favorites are Spock, Data, Seven, you know. But this flips the trope on its ear. It's not a character trying to be or wanted to be human. This is a character just disguising himself as human so he can go after whatever he's after. So like I said, it just changes everything. Go ahead, Nemesis.
Yeah, I think there's two different ways that I look at this scene. I haven't read all the comic books, but I am familiar with them. So I knew that he was an alien. I kind of had that under my hat the whole time. So that was the surprise. Mm-hmm. But the way this scene unfolded definitely was. So, you know, and it was a pleasant surprise, a shock, a reveal. The fact that he went after them, I mean, I was watching this thinking, well, you know, whether you want to attribute it to parentage or whatever, you know, there's a bit of Five in Hargreaves, or a bit of Hargreaves in Five, because, you know, he's basically parenting his son when he destroyed all those people in the donut shop, you know. So I was like, yeah, I could definitely see that ruthlessness in them. My problem with this is that I'm starting to have trouble keeping all the timelines straight and what all of this stuff means. And what do I mean by that? So presumably the original timeline was that Majestic 12 had Kennedy assassinated, and, you know, and then what happened with Hargreaves? You know, that's what I want to know. So in the original timeline, when the Umbrella Academy first opened, Hargreaves left Majestic 12 but didn't kill them, or did he kill them? I don't know. You know, but then the council, or whatever that group is called, sent Old Five back. You know, who was his target? I'm not exactly sure. Was it Hargreaves? You know, I don't know who he was supposed to be aiming at. And then the Umbrella Academy people messed that up and created yet another new timeline. So now Majestic 12 is dead, you know, and is that because they messed with the timeline and hard, you know? So I'm like completely confused now. I was like, and I'm hoping that I'll come back and it'll get resolved. But now I'm like, who has changed what? Did Hargreaves change the timeline because the kids showed up and then he lost his temper and killed Majestic 12? So then that's going to affect Hargreaves' timeline going forward in some way? You know, what are all the ramifications here? And it's like, I almost need a chart now, because it's getting way too complicated for me. You know, I'm just like, what is going on here? It's like, it seems like there's four or five threads hanging out there, and I don't know who is pulling on what thread and what is happening because of it. And it just seems to be pure chaos, which could be a good thing. But all I'm saying is, right now, in the larger context, for me, this scene shows that the past has gone completely off the rails, and I don't know who has caused it, but it seems to be completely out of control.
I wouldn't be surprised if Hargreaves would have killed him anyway, but yeah, that's a fair point.
Well, this is like I say all the time, if you're going to use time travel, you have to decide what the rules are, and then you have to stay with them. I agree with what you're saying on a different level. I want to know what the original motives are. I think that all centers around Hargreaves. What are the motives here? Because like you said, we can't even find who was originally supposed to do what with who. But the question is, why? Why? That's what we need to know, why. So before we go to the next thing, Nemesis, I want to know if you have any thoughts on the final resolution of the JFK situation, because you had that classic rant about how, once again, this seems to be the focal point of all time travel. So what do you think about the way they wrapped it line up?
And that's what I'm saying. That comes right back to my point with the multiple threads. I'm like, was JFK in the original timeline why do I always forget their name? What is the commission? The original timeline that the commission is supposed to be protecting, did JFK get assassinated? with, you know, are we in our timeline, you know, in the real world, are we living an alternate timeline according to the Umbrella Academy? You know, what was all going on there? It's like, if that's what they're trying to do, then maybe I would backtrack a little bit on the JFK thing. You know, it still is an overused event, in my opinion. But if if you start throwing all of, you know, it's almost like a nexus event and all these things around it. So maybe not the actual assassination of JFK, but the whys and the groups that are doing stuff and everything, because that could be interesting. So if you're saying that JFK being assassinated by one group caused one timeline, but, you know, these kids came in and messed it up, so somebody else killed him, and then Hargreaves killed the Majestic 12 people, and that results in a completely different timeline. Well, now it's starting to get a little bit interesting again, because we're saying, you know, the big event, everything looks like it still happened the same way, but it really didn't, you know, really because did. the little details matter.
Yeah, like, and what if that's a it's a weird term to use, but what if that's kind of a distraction? You know, the fact that, like, the JFK assassination is always a fixed point in time, so the real deal is what's happening around it.
Yeah, and why, and who killed him, and why, you know? And if that's what they're doing, then it gets to be interesting again, which is why I'm confused, because I'm like, there's all sorts of timelines that I need to know who have what motivation and what was the original timeline they were supposed to be protecting, and why was Old Five there, and what was he doing? You know, it's like, you know, I got tons of questions. So, I mean, I guess that's a good thing, but it's only a good thing if they answer those questions and give me some answers later on. Otherwise, it's just, then it's just a hot mess if you just leave it up in the air. So.
That's right. Those answers have to justify these individual journeys we've been on, which leads me to the next big moment, and it's basically Ben and Vanya, but I'm going to talk about two separate things. The first thing is, I have to say, this was kind of the end of me caring about Vanya, and I really didn't want that to happen, because I really liked her, and then when I saw what they did to her, my heart really kind of went out to her, and then, you know, then she started losing me a little bit this season, and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like what they did with Dark Phoenix. Are you evil? Are you a victim? Are you broken inside? That's why you can't control your powers. But the reason this was the end for me about caring about her is because it felt like another all for nothing situation. You're just a function. You're not a person. So when we need something as a catalyst to start our next adventure, oh, well, Vanya blows up. That's it. And it's like, there's nothing that you've done or nothing that you've shown me. She was way more interesting last year. But now it's like, you're just a plot device to make stuff happen. And there's not even any resolution on who you are as a person. It's like, you haven't grown. You're always one bad day away from becoming the White Violin. And your family knows that, and they just won't kill you. So I'm just like, I can't care about you that much past this. That's number one. Number two, when I saw, I was kind of disappointed when I saw everybody fighting to get to her, because I really thought they were going to make it. It was like a big tease, and I thought, well, Diego's going to save the day. Oh, okay. Somebody else is going to save the day. Okay. But it's like, nope, 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 and then it's Ben. I'm like, okay, I guess I can take that, but if it were that simple, why hasn't Ben always saved the day? Mm-hmm. If Vanya Phoenix out and Ben is not harmed by that, and he can emotionally connect with her and power her down, have we tried that before? Like, you know, it just, that's what I'm saying. It just took all the wind out of my sails in terms of Vanya as a character. But with Ben, I think he got a good send off. I just don't know if I buy it in terms of the comic book rules of the world, why all of a sudden, unless you want to paint it as, now I'm ready to go, maybe before I wasn't ready, now I'm actually ready to transition to where the spirits are and no longer be stuck. But, you know, it looked visually really good, but me trying to make story world and emotional sense out of it really just left me kind of frustrated. Because I was like, well, you can't have it where Ben's immune to her power, because that means that Ben has been the fail-safe all along. So we're just using him now? We're just not figuring this out? And, you know, so I don't know. But I want to hear what you guys thought about it. I just didn't feel it was a resolution that was worthy of everything. The good news is there's some things that happen next episode. That's good. But I'm talking about this particular send-off. It was a good emotional send-off for Ben, but I'm like, is this like Dorothy Gale in The Wizard of Oz? Have you always had the power? And, you know, you always had it inside of you. You just didn't believe it. Is that what this was? And how many more times are we going to have you defuse Vanya? So anyway, so let me hear what you thought. Start with Steve.
Yeah, I had the same problems that you did with the way the scene was executed to a certain extent. My main thing was they wasted our time. They wasted our time because they spent all these minutes with all of these characters trying to go over to reach Vanya and then fail, when Ben could have done it the entire time. And I was actually screaming at the screen when I saw this all happening. Why don't you send Ben? He's a ghost. He can't be hurt by this thing. Why are you doing this? I mean, and it was just, and then what ended up happening is, you know, all three of them fail. And Ben is like, okay, well, you guys screwed up. I guess I'll go and save you. And it's just, it's completely a waste of time. It was completely pointless. They could have had him go in from the very start and would have made more sense. I was not a fan of that. I did, however, like Ben once he got to Vanya, because at that point I kind of felt like, okay, this feels right. So Ben basically is sacrificing himself to save her. So after all of these episodes where he's basically been in the background, kind of, you know, messing around with Klaus, now I feel like Ben actually got to do something and got to do something important, and his presence here is justified. And not only that, I kind of felt it was true to Ben's character, because he was always kind of the nice guy. And he, you know, he's the one that's more empathetic than most of the other ones. So it really made sense that he would be the one to get through to Vanya to reach her. In addition to the fact that he's a ghost and has whatever spiritual abilities that he has. So that really kind of worked. When it came to Vanya though, I'm kind of in the same place. I mean, part of it is, yeah, it's that she's always, you know, reduced to being the ticking time bomb. But it's also that with the resolution of this particular plot point, the only thing she has left is Sissy and Harlan, the two least interesting subplots in this entire show or in this entire season. And so, you know, you're kind of left with the wind out of your sails. It's like, okay, now what does she do? Because there's nothing left to resolve except those two points, which I'm not invested in any way. So, yeah, I have to say, it's a mixed bag as a scene goes. I think for Ben, it was very good. I think for Vanya, it was, I don't know that there's more I can say than that.
I thought we were going to dive more deeply into the particulars of her abuse and how it affects her, mm-hmm. and how yeah. maybe writing something in her soul, mm-hmm. or healing a memory or anything like that, which
or that she learned something from it.
Right. I was even ready, if you can believe it, I was even ready for a chrysalis scene, mm-hmm. or a chrysalis, however you say it, where she actually morphed into something else, where the broken, scared girl was gone. And somebody else came out. I was ready for that.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, this is just, I don't know. This was Cybok in Star Trek V. Let me share your pain. Okay. go ahead, Nemesis.
Yeah. Shaming is going to be a lot nicer than I am to this scene. So I absolutely hated this. It made no sense to me on multiple levels. And so let's start from the comic book level. So you've got a character who's basically Dead Man, you know, with some other powers. So he's basically Dead Man from DC. And he's already shown that he is not affected by Vanya's powers. Yet, to me, it was quite clear that when he possessed her and then was able to calm Vanya, that fighting her powers while he was in her caused him to destabilize and die. So Vanya killed him, as far as I'm concerned. That's what I saw in this episode, which makes absolutely no sense to me. I didn't get the impression at all that Ben was like, you know, I've done my job, it's time to move on, or anything like that. And not only that, I think, you know, from a behind the scenes standpoint, I think this was a convenient way for the writers to get rid of Ben, who they had no idea what to do with. They gave him some hokey stuff through the season. And really, they hit on who Ben should be right at the very beginning, because that very opening scene of the season where Ben is possessed someone like Deadman and is sending his tentacles or whatever it is out of a possessed body was friggin' awesome. Mm. You know, that should be Ben going forward. And they wasted that and then wrote him off the show as far as I'm concerned. So there's that. Then I absolutely agree with you on Vanya. Vanya, you know, I don't remember what show it was we were talking about, but Steve coined the phrase, you know, somebody learns nothing. You know, Vanya learns nothing.
That's Harley. Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's Vanya too. Vanya learns nothing. You know, here Vanya was given pretty much, you know, what is the gold standard in therapy, and that she's given perfect recollection of everything that has led up to all of her mental traumas and her entire life. And she is an adult, you know, whatever it is, she's, you know, she was functioning as a functional adult in the first season. Yes, she had her problems like everyone does, but she was, you know, compared to everybody else, she was probably one of the more adult members of the group. So she's able to look at all that, see the different motivations for why people did things in her life, see how dangerous she was and everything. Yes, it's going to be, you know, heartbreaking and disappointing and everything else, but you'd think she would have some catharsis. She would have some, she would learn something from that. But the only thing Vanya takes away from it is to feel sorry for herself and go into bomb mode again, which pretty much says exactly what you were talking about, which is Vanya will always go into bomb mode. Vanya will never have any emotional growth whatsoever, which makes me hate Vanya. Because if Vanya was a character on a road, a hard, bumpy road, trying to move forward and improve herself and become a better person and perfect Vanya as a person, I would cheer for her. I would be all for in her journey to try and control her powers and control her emotions and everything else. But that is not Vanya. Vanya is a person who is going to keep everything bottled up until she explodes again. And she will never, ever, and I'm going to put this in stone, and maybe I'll be wrong, but I don't think I will. In this TV series, she is never going to grow emotionally or learn anything. She is always going to be the stunted, ugly character that she is.
Well, I think this goes back to what was said earlier, that being the pull of this show is actually the events and not the characters, except for Five and Allison. And I think that's what comes through in this scene. It's a poignant moment at best, but we don't care, and it doesn't resolve anything. We're supposed to be seeing them transition from one thing to the other. Go ahead, Bracey.
Yeah, I'm right up there with the rest of you guys on this, so let's break it on down. Steve was right. Too much of this scene was a waste of time, unfortunately. As soon as, like, you know, Rumor runs out, and, you know, she gets blasted back, and then Diego runs out. Like, that was fine. When Diego says, like, you know, Klaus, it's up to you, buddy, and he cuts loose the fire hose, is like, no. Like, little 125-pound Klaus is not going to make it where these two didn't.
Right.
And sure enough, like, he's trying to, like, Batman wall walk, like, 1960 style, up the hallway. And I was like, and the whole time I was going, like, dude, send a ghost in. Send any ghost in. You've got ghosts. Ghosts don't care about energy and matter and all that stuff. They just walk through all that crap. And so it was just, it was filler. It was filler. Can't stand filler. Filler scene. It could have all been done so much more succinctly. And we're, I don't remember if it was like the last pod we were talking about, you know, when you're, I think it was before the pod, like we were talking about when you edit, you've got to kill your children. You've got to pare things down to the storytelling essentials. You know, you don't hold on a scene any longer than you need to, you know, and you've got to show a scene as long as it needs to be. And, you know, that's it's an art figuring that out. And they just didn't have that here. But when Ben finally gets to Vanya, although it takes him forever to get to Vanya, like, why is it taking him so long when he clearly has no trouble walking to her? The discorporation of his spirit, his connection to the prime world, appears to occur from actually entering her body. Now, I guess that just breaks his connection to the material world, and that's fine. I didn't mind that, because they did give Ben something that all real heroic comic book characters deserve. He got the heroic death. You know, he had that big self-sacrificing moment. Ben goes out like a hero. Unfortunately, as everybody else has discussed, Vanya is anything but a hero. Like, every episode, I keep trying to find something about this character to like. And I just can't do it. The longer the season goes on, the more I dislike her. Even when she's been given this grand epiphany of everything. And, you know, she even goes so far as, like, you know, she's like, you know, I don't even deserve to live. It's like, yeah, this is your moment. Like, you save the world, sacrifice yourself. This could be your big heroic moment, because I am a sucker for a redemption story. And that's what I was hoping for out of this. But Vanya's redemption has no consequence to her. Like, Ben dies, but Ben's been dead for 17 years already. He's always like, yeah, don't worry, it's all been gravy up till now. You know, I got 17 extra years of kind of hanging out with Klaus. So it costs her nothing. And like Nemesis says, she keeps learning nothing from it. And I can't like her as a character, whereas, you know, season one, she was very easy to sympathize with and empathize with. I've got none of that for her in this season. It's just, she's just an empty shell. Like you said, DT, she has a plot device. She's always going to make the wrong decision because that's what the writers are going to need in any given moment. I wish she had either gone through a chrysalis moment, or I wish she'd have come out with this real epiphany so that, she doesn't always revert to doing what Vanya does, which is basically explode. And we'll see that in the next episode. Her, you know, her way of dealing with trouble is, you know, boom, big old blast wave. Just it's sad to see that this is a character with a lot of potential. If you look at first season, and the writers don't seem to know what to do with her, other than make her that, you know, that deus ex machina. And so she's never going to get to do anything else. I think the grandest thing to do with her is they need to do what they did with Stranger Things, the second season, where Millie Bobby Brown's character just kept going more and more powerful. I think you need to get to a point where you got to kind of nerf her. Something's got to happen and she's got to get nerfed, because she's not going to be interesting as long as she's Vanya the Bomb.
That's very well said. I wanted to hear one of two conversations. I wanted them to have written Ben from the beginning of this season saying, you know, Klaus, I can leave whenever I get ready, but it would be like suicide. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the courage to kill myself again. So then when he makes a sacrifice at the end, he can say something like, okay, well, I found something worth dying for. Now all of a sudden I care. That's what we call an arc. Or I would have wanted Ben to have said to Vanya, he would have looked her in the face and said, this is what you cost, Vanya. Every time you go off, somebody has to die. And this time it's me for the last time. Oh, my goodness. Now yeah. I care. Mm. See what I mean? And now you put Vanya in a position to either, she's either going to do like original Dark Phoenix and kill herself, like she should have a long time ago. Or I would like to see an arc where Vanya tries to purge herself of her powers, like Rogue did in the original X3. I mean, there's just so many easy writing fixes to create arcs to make us care. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So just from the Writer's Code segment. Okay, next I want to talk about, and I'm really excited to hear what you guys think about this. I want to talk about 5 versus 5, and I can do this all day. Not to Captain America. Just what did you think about that whole exchange? Because Luther's another one who's just like, I'm like, dude, you were interesting for about 5 minutes when you realized you're basically a bouncer, and that's where you need to stay. A mediator, a negotiator, a psychologist, and none of the above. So just kick him in the nuts and shut him up. Good idea. Okay. So let me hear what you guys think about Five versus Five and all its hilarious glory. Start with Nemesis.
I mean, this was just pure comic book fun. I enjoyed it for what it was. You know, as you said, with Luther, he's just a comic relief. But seeing these two go at it, and I always love to see two teleporters go at it, and to see two versions of this character go at it like that, I think it was done well. So somebody had a very good and a very clear vision of what two teleporters fighting would be like, which translated well to the screen. And to me, it was just... In this whole episode, it was the scene that I enjoyed the most, because I just sat back and took it in, and I watched it several times and just took it in and enjoyed it for all of its nerdy goodness. And that's great. You know what I mean? You need that every now and then, you know, even if it, you know, and the fact that it fit into what was going on with their plot and everything makes it even better. But I just love the fact that they conceptualize what it would be like when you have two teleporters fighting each other, and they delivered it on screen, and it didn't disappoint. In fact, it lived up to my expectations of everything I've ever seen in the comics and everything else. And that is probably some of the highest praise I could give when it comes to, you know, you showing me a typical type of fight with powers and how I envision it in my mind, and then when I see it on screen, it's what I always envision. So kudos to them for that.
Yes, yes, bringing something to life that's exactly what you thought it would be.
Yep.
Go ahead, Bracey.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I don't know if the guys who were working on the show have read this particular comic or not, but there's an issue of Fantastic Four. I recall, Dr. Doom had just come back. He had his new Promethean armor. It's being drawn by Walt Simonson, and they were dealing with the Time Variance Authority. And Dr. Doom challenged Reed Richards to a duel, and it was a duel using time travel. And it looked like this fight, you know, like Doom's like, you know, like, and already Richards, you have lost because I have disappeared like 1.003 seconds into the past, and now I'm behind you and I'm going to crush you. And then, like, you know, Doom's like, you know, Richards like, oh no, that's what you think, Doom, but I've already teleported over here. And like this cool kind of Doctor Who kind of fight going on, which is excellent. And that's what this reminded me of. It's the best teleportation battle I've seen since X2, the great Nightcrawler thing, you know, done by Bryan Singer in that film. And I loved the speed of the battle, because even though the time slowed down, you can see Luther hasn't recovered from his kick to the nuts yet. And they're zipping around all over the place. And I love how you're seeing, like, you know, one guy starts to throw a punch and the other guy teleports. And when they teleport back, you know, the other guy's trying to complete his punch, but now this guy's throwing a kick over here and they just keep teleporting out of the way. And like they've, this whole kind of chess match of trying to guesstimate where the other guy is going to be so that they can actually connect without getting tagged themselves. Love that so, so much. It was so much fun. And it was even fun seeing them, like, I even liked the whole setup when, like, they're just dying to fight because they're in stage five, the homicidal rage. And, you know, Five is asking old Five, is like, you know, do you want the honors? Like, nah, you go ahead. He's the one to kick Luther in the nuts. And, you know, poor Luther, he really is not a thinker at all. And watching him try and settle things down between the two of them, these highly skilled, highly intelligent assassins, is ridiculous. So that was a little bit of, like, you know, Nemesis. It was just pure comic book fun, a real delight. Although, as usual, I do have nitpicks when it comes to powers, because there comes times when we see Five runs out of gas and he can't teleport. You know, he's got to take a couple of minutes to kind of catch his wind. So, like, they get tired enough to, I guess, they stop. You know, I can do this all day. And I thought they were just going to go into a pure fist fight because they looked like they couldn't teleport anymore.
Right.
And like in a moment, they still managed to teleport a couple more times, but they were slowed down enough that like Luther could threaten them with the gun. And then when Old Five gets knocked down, you know, like Luther's like, oh, don't move. It's like, dude, just teleport. That's all you got to do. You can disappear in the blink of an eye. So that's my only caveat. Other than that, this was a really fun scene and everything. Because I, outside of a jumper, I've never seen a teleporter fighting teleporter before. And this was just as much fun to behold.
It really was. It really was. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I think that you guys have pretty much said most of what needs to be said about it. It was a really good scene for the most part. I don't know. When you guys were talking about Five versus Five, I don't know why, but I kept thinking of Spy versus Spy from Mad Magazine. and it is kind of like that. I mean, this whole fight does play out a little bit like this, where you have these two guys that are equals, and they're just playing hit and run with each other, and it's really, really well played like that. The other thing that I was kind of thinking is also, this is another one of those scenes where the musical accompaniment is perfect and really works. It doesn't work quite as well as the other two examples, which is the Butthole Surfers one with the, you know, the Alice in Wonderland dream. Mm-hmm. And the other one, which is the Kiss fight scene with Diego and Young Vive. But this one, I would say, is a third, and which is they use, you know, Dancing with Myself, you know, all the while they're fighting with each other. And I'm like, yeah, that is, it's another one of those cases where I'm assuming Gerard Way is involved with the musical selections, and it's just absolutely thematically spot on, and it works really well. But aside from that, I would say the only negative about it was, yeah, Luther is a lead weight. He does absolutely nothing other than slow the other two down. And it's like, you know that they're going to have this fight. And all Luther is doing is dragging out the preamble. And it's just, come on. And he doesn't even save the briefcase. I'm like, come on, man. he's completely useless.
We don't go into this a lot, but I do have to say that this show, this season, one of the strongest things for this season has really been all of the behind-the-scenes stuff. So the production value, the musical choices, the accompanying, you know, actual licensed music that they've used, the post-production stuff as far as the effects and everything have all been on point and very good. So from that standpoint, this show has been really quite wonderful. You know, whoever is running this show and coordinating, bringing in the music and all that stuff has done quite an incredible job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it really shows, particularly with that scene. I mean, you can the musical choices, the special effects. I mean, everything. It's just comes together really, really well.
So I'm glad Vanya's, you know, all okay and everything, but isn't the FBI still going to have some questions about all those dead agents? I'm just throwing that out there. Anyway. So we have to hit this last one, even though I really don't want to, but we have to talk about it. Then we'll be we have to talk about the handler Lila AJ Carmichael thing. I thought this was such an incredible character, like AJ Carmichael. I'm like, Lila gets the information, gets the case, apparently, or the idea is maybe she knows what really happened around her parents' death, like who ordered the hit and who carried out and all that. But I just dislike both of them so intensely until it was just really hard for me to care, because the handler should not be in the mix, because she shouldn't be trusted by anybody or anything at this point. So every time I see her, I just kind of roll my eyes. And like I told you about Lila, you know, from scene one, she's just like Girardi to me. I'm like, nope. No, there's nothing good about it. In any possible way will you be anything redemptive in this show. So nope, my spider sense, you know, it was tingling on the instant. So just kind of wrapping up, Carmichael's coming to the conclusion of what they're doing. It just feels more and more like they're extraneous. Like, you know, she's not the main villain. She's a villain, I guess, but she's not the main focus. She just feels, I don't know, redundant is not the right word. She just feels tacked on, She feels like the hammer on me. Like, we can pull you out. Not last season. Last season, she was central to what was going on. But now I feel like we could just pull all your stuff out and be like, whatever, whatever. So give me briefly your thoughts on that, because I almost spent a lot of time on it because I'm like, I don't care about none of y'all. But anyway, go ahead, Bracey.
Yeah, I'm like you. It's like if the handler is supposed to be the main bad guy for this season, she's not there enough, if you know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
They take too much time building to her. Because, you know, this is a short season. It's not like, you know, your typical TV, which is 22 episodes. You know, these kind of shows, they're run on a much tighter schedule, but 10 episodes, which is fine. I like a tighter story. But, you know, if this was like, you know, back in the day I was watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you could start off demoting the handler and build her rise in a power in a far more organic way. You could see the machinations. Like, for instance, I love the season where, like, Angel becomes a villain, you know, after sleeping with Buffy in the previous season, the cliffhanger, and he becomes Angelus. And, like, all this build-up to the final climax that you know is coming, and you don't really get that with the handler. She gets demoted, she does a couple of sneaky things, gets over really fast, takes charge, but she's just not present enough herself, whether it's her or even the people she's manipulating. She just never really feels like that that big, bad, evil guy that you're supposed to have in, like, this sort of episodic TV. So, you know, I'm like you. The plot of just trying to avert the apocalypse once again could have been enough without her.
Right. Right. Could have been enough without her. That's it, exactly. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with any of that. I've been thinking about the handler for a while, and I keep getting this feeling like I really hate her, and not necessarily in an I love to hate her way. There is a little bit of that, but I there's just a feeling like I hate this character, and I think part of it is I just really don't like villains that are 100% pure evil, and that's all she's been. And again, I think Jeff may have hit on a little bit of it. We don't see her progression to how she really becomes the head honcho, other than like a last minute coup. And I kind of feel like if it had been a longer season, we might have seen a little bit more of that. But the problem really is that she's so evil and she is so despicable, and we see the extent to which she's evil in the next episode. And it's like, why would anyone trust her? The only thing is that the actress who plays her is really, really good. I mean, mm-hmm. She is very, very good. I will give her full credit for that. But I hate this character. And I'm still trying to lay my finger exactly on why, beyond the fact that she just seems like one note evil to me. And I just feel like she should have been a better character than she was. Mm-hmm. I just feel like the things didn't connect. Her story didn't connect. Her arc didn't really connect the way that it should have. And it probably is because she has been on the sidelines for so long and she hasn't been explored properly the way that she should be. So, yeah, I have to look at her as a missed opportunity.
Well, I can tell you what it is that's sending out that ion pulse that's messing up your shields.
Yeah.
And what it is that she's smarmy, but she hasn't earned it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's probably it.
When we see a Reverse Flash on the CW, we know that Eobard has come across time. He's created his own speed force. He's a genius at a level that's beyond anybody else on the show. He's figured out how to get away from the speed specters, the speed ghosts that chase down time travelers. He's created a time bubble machine. Mm-hmm. So he's done a lot to earn that attitude, because he's bringing something with the table that justifies his superior attitude towards Barry. And he really can mentor Barry, because when we meet him, Barry's mm-hmm. just now getting his powers. And Eobard has come back through time. He got stuck there, but he's obviously mastered a level of speed that Barry has not. So mm-hmm. that smarm is earned. Mm-hmm. This character showed up smarmy. We're like, why?
And on top of that, I would say one thing. The successes that she has are because the heroes are not written as smart as they should be. And she is not showing genuine intelligence herself. I think if there was more of that, I think I would probably hate her a bit less.
Okay, go ahead, Nemesis.
Yeah, I think you guys hit on it. The example I was going to give was the difference between, you know, Effie here from The Hunger Games and a Lex Luthor. You know, so Effie is pretending to be a Lex Luthor. You know, first of all, you know, we open up with her at the beginning getting fired and fearing for her life and everything. And suddenly we have the commission and we're supposed to care about all this, but we never saw any of that in season one, really. We saw her, but we didn't see all of this. We don't really believe that she's in any danger, and we don't really care about her anyway. And then she does all of these things, and we're supposed to believe that she's this mastermind who took control, but we don't buy it, you know? And you contrast that with somebody like Luthor in the original Justice League cartoon, who maneuvered behind the scenes to use Cadmus to do what he wanted and bring back Brainiac and everything, and we absolutely buy it. We absolutely believe that Lex Luthor is this evil genius who was manipulating other evil geniuses in order to get what he wanted. And you've never seen anything from that like that from her. In fact, when you have seen her, she seems ridiculous and she looks ridiculous. And you don't believe that she could plot her way out of a paper bag, let alone take you over this whole commission. And right. So, you know, we really don't buy it and we really don't care one way or the other. Because we don't care about her as a character. I mean, let's be honest about it. Even though we love to hate Lex Luthor, we love to hate Lex Luthor. We would be upset if Lex Luthor disappeared from DC Comics tomorrow.
Yeah.
We would be rioting in the streets. We hate Joker, a lot of us. You know, there's some of us who hate Joker hair more than others. But if Joker all of a sudden disappeared for all time and was never to come back, I'm pretty sure even the people that hate Joker here would be upset about that. You know?
No. Okay.
All right. I stand corrected. Woo! Look at
you
that.
You crossed the line.
Okay. But, you know, but there's all types of those types of characters out there, you know? And
your point is well taken, though. I understand what you're saying.
Your point is fair.
Yeah, and she is not one of them. And the fact that, you know, and maybe this is just me, but every time I look at her and her getup, I just can't get past Effie from Hunger Games. That's who she is.
Yeah.
And Effie was not a villain. She was just ridiculous, you know, and a little pathetic at the end, to be perfectly honest with you. And when I look at this character, I translate that to her. I don't know if that, you know, I committed the production and everything, but in this case, I think that may have been a mistake because really that's the way it comes off to me. And rightly or wrongly, I attribute a lot of the attributes of that character from the Hunger Games movies to this character the minute I saw her on the screen for the first time.
Actually, I'm going to kind of add something. This kind of character they did right on Doctor Who, which was Missy from the 12th Doctor's era. I mean, she was very much this kind of character, but and you know she was over the top and all that. But the thing is, she had clear intelligence. You know, real menace, and she was entertaining to watch.
Yes.
I don't get any of that from the Handler at all, and I feel like that. Yeah, there definitely were a lot of execution mistakes there.
Yeah, I mean, would you ever think if you were in a room alone with the Handler that you were in danger for your life? Like you would be in danger. You know, even Lila, as much as you can't stand her, you could feel yourself in danger, you know, with you're in the room with an actual villain. If you were in the room with five and you were his target, you would feel danger.
Yeah.
Would you ever feel in danger from her? I wouldn't.
No.
You know? I'll tell you.
I'm laughing at the thought of it.
she'd have damn sure never been able to stab me in the chest sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
Well, you said it earlier. She only gets away with what she gets away with because people around her react stupidly.
Yeah.
If there was anybody that reacted with any sense, it's like the horror movie tropes. They only work because people react stupidly. Now, I want you to think about the nightclub owner in Tron Legacy. Remember him?
Yes.
Over the top characters only work when they know they're over the top.
Yeah.
When they don't take themselves seriously and they know they're just a carnival barker, They're just fluff. They're just smoke and mirrors. Then they're hilarious. They're fun to watch. It's when over-the-top characters think that we're going to take them seriously. That's what makes you hate them. Like, yeah, just shut up. you're like the dude that's been on the bench all season and they win a championship and you're strutting like you did something. You're a bench warmer. You know, let the people who actually scored, let them strut. You can cheer, but when you get on camera, you get all cocky talking about what we did. Really? Really?
So yeah, leave the strutting to Constantine, okay? He's got it down.
It's right, like if you ask me to watch the cast of SpongeBob presents Othello, and I'm supposed to take it seriously, I'd be like, A for effort, I guess, but no, just no.
But him singing Desdemona, that would be gold right there. But anyway, on that note, we'll wrap this episode up. This was the penultimate episode, but it was actually the end for a lot of very specific arcs. And the last episode, which we'll review after the break, just goes in so many different directions. So it's going to be fun to talk about that. So we're going to take a break right now. We're going to let you listen to some other materials from our sponsors. And we'll be back in 5.
From the aisles to the review station, Undercover Capes brings you all things action figure related. Join host Bob O'Mac as he shares his insights and thoughts on the plastic revolution.
Beyond the world of DC and Marvel, there is a world that opens the imagination in ways that you've never known. The world of indie comics is here, with comic books that you didn't even know existed. Thanks to Dodgy, Al Mega, and the random dude Josh, you too will have your eyes open to new books in the indie comic universe. Check out Flipside Focus, only on the Undercover Capes Podcast Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that break. Now we're going to talk about Umbrella Academy Season 2, Episode 10, entitled The End of Something, which is probably the most accurate title we've heard all season long.
Very true.
Yes. Definitely what this episode felt like. I'll say that.
There was an ending.
Yeah, that's right.
Something, but there was an ending.
So, Vanya shut down again, but we don't care anymore about her, and she hasn't grown as a character, which makes you feel like this can just keep happening as many times as they want.
Vanya don't learn nothing.
Learn nothing. Doomsday is prevented, but we know that just means this week. Something's up with Harlan because he didn't actually lose all of his Vanya-infused power. And I'm like, whoever said it last pod, like Sissy and Harlan are just not interesting. I'm like, just let them go. If you're not going to bring them back to the future, which is what you should have done to make it interesting, have Vanya come back with a family. Once again, that's an easy writing fix. If that had actually happened, can you imagine the fish out of water experiences of Sissy in 2019? And just everything would have been different if you had had the courage to pull the trigger on at least letting one family come through, if they weren't going to let Ray come through. Let Sissy and Harlan come here. Then all of a sudden, that's interesting. But nope. Okay. So Ben is gone. Hargreaves is an alien. And once again, the nexus of all time travel stories, JFK. He was assassinated like he was supposed to be, we think. And we don't really know what the original was. And we might not ever know. And the handler is preparing for all-out war. And so this episode feels like the first episode of the next season. Because it feels like last episode finished this season. So this is maybe a transition finale and not a finale finale. So this time we'll go a little bit more chronologically because I want to save the big boom for the end because, oh my goodness. So we already talked.
Can I interject something real quick?
What did you say?
I was going to say something real quick is that this episode felt disconnected from everything else. What it felt like to me was an OVA from anime, you know, where they're like, oh, we need another episode, so we're just going to create something wild and crazy using these characters. And maybe it'll sort of tie in, but we really don't care as long as we put something out there. So.
Oh, man. So so we see the kids around Ben's casket again, and Hargreaves is blaming them again. But we know we have a totally different context now. You're not a human. Whatever it is you're up to, you have nothing but disdain and contempt. Because you're dealing with a different species that doesn't work like yours. So that's nearly the same thing. Your heinous acts about bringing your wife back as a love bot and your super smart chimp is functional now. It's no longer emotional. Functional, unless you show us you really did care about Grace, but there are functions, there are things that you needed. And so it has a totally different context now. So now we can't really think of you as necessarily evil or depraved or cynical or just a real jerk or whatever, because you're not human. Everything's different now, I'm telling you. I think the impact of that reveal was minimized, but hopefully next season we'll address it. Okay? So they didn't, they averted the nuclear war, but now they're wanted by the FBI and the Temps Commission. Now, this is what I talked about before. I still say that their interference in the 1960s, particularly 63, should have created a Sentinel program because they were heroes, and now I guess their vigilantes are outlaws and their faces are blasted all over the media. And you can't tell me that between that time and now, someone wouldn't have thought of a Sentinel. Maybe Hargreaves' killing of the force majeure 12, I forgot the name. Maybe that's what shut that down. Yeah, that. Maybe that's what shut that down, maybe. But
I think Sylvain, the ending of this episode may prove to be that Sentinel program. But when we get to the ending, we can talk about that. So.
Okay. And so Vanya is trying to reach back, kind of not through time, but whatever. So what we've got to deal with first off is the fact that Harlan is overloading on the power. And the reason that gets on my nerves is because it's the exact same plot line with a different character that we care about even less than Vanya. So the good thing about this scene was all the shenanigans, because there's a lot of shenanigans that happen. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about Harlan, all that different kind of stuff, and Sissy with the gun and blah, 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 blah. But what ends up happening? There's a slaughter and a time travel reversal. And finally, that stupid handler gets hers. Finally. So I'll throw my thoughts in later, but let me hear what you thought about that whole sequence. Start with Bracey.
Sorry, my wife distracted me saying, what's the sequence we're talking about?
Well, just start with Harlan. I skipped over the temp commission and them appearing in the farm. So just start with Harlan being caught up in his powers vortex, which is just like Vanya 2.0.
Okay, yeah. I actually thought this whole plot line was stupid. I haven't liked it from the onset. Like, why? I thought it was kind of stupid. Because I thought she just gave him CPR to bring him back to life. But now, like, finding out that she used her power to bring him back to life, it just, I don't like how Vanya's powers just do everything. I really, really don't like that. And, like, I'm okay with, like, okay, like, say Silver Surfer, he's got cosmic power. He can do doggone near everything. But you still, in the context of the power of cosmic, you still understand a lot of things that he can do. They make sense within that framework. You're like, oh, you know, I can manipulate matter and energy. I can cross dimensional barriers. I can travel faster than the speed of light. I can do a lot of things. And you can explain a lot of things via his power cosmic. But Vanya, she's just this big box of, like, whatever we need at the time. And I don't like that in the character. I do not like that in the character at all. It just leads to all sorts of nonsense, like this whole thing with Harlan. Now, somehow, by giving him CPR, she not only brought him back to life, but she infused him with enough of her power that somehow it grew within him over time, to the point where he's like mini Dark Phoenixing out. Like, I don't like this. I don't like this on so many levels. And, you know, because it's her power in him, like, she can feel this whole connection. The only thing that might be interesting out of this whole thing for me is the fact that wouldn't it be kind of interesting in a way if Harlan ends up being somehow basically the father or the start of all these metahumans who were born in 1981? We get back in that whole time travel thing of the causality loops that, like, by Vanya going back in the past, Harlan later on becomes her father or her grandfather, since they're 67 years removed in the timeline. That's potentially interesting, but everything else about it, I just don't like it. It's like you guys said, it's mini Vanya, don't really care about him. The fact that, we do see him, like, say something, and I can't remember if he ever said a word, an actual word, the rest of the season. I don't remember if he did. But the fact that he does say some things here and there, I think it's going to affect his intelligence. Because if it doesn't, what is more terrifying than Vanya? An autistic kid with all of Vanya's powers, and powers that are very emotionally driven. And you see Harlan has these autistic fits of temper sometimes. And that could blow up the whole doggone world. You talk about Vanya being the bomb, at least you can keep Vanya cool every now and again. Harlan could just destroy the bomb on any, you know, destroy the world on any given day. So I don't like what they've set up here. I don't like it at all. It's redundant. It's rather pointless. It doesn't do anything for Harlan or Sissy. characters we don't really care about that much anyway, and it doesn't do anything for Vanya. Once again, Vanya's character does not advance, even though they try and give her like this sympathetic heroic role moment, but it just, none of it works. Don't like it. Thumbs down.
Let me throw in here very quickly that I can't stand the Neo Smith trope where a little bit of the hero turns into a million of the villain. And that's the balance. That is not balance. That's a million and one. But all of a sudden, the villain or summons an ounce of the hero's power and becomes 10 times more powerful than they are and can do things that they can't do. I've never, ever understood that. It's like it's a form of the Franklin Richards thing. I've just never, never understood how all of a sudden, you know, you get a little bit of whatever, and now you can do, you know, exponentially more than they can. I can't stand it. Anyway, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I think Jeff covered like most of the high points with this one. The one thing that I'm going to definitely add here is, in addition to the pointlessness of the Vanya arc in general, it's really apparent that Harlan was used as an anchor so that it would force the Umbrella Academy to go over there to the farm and have it out with the commission over there. Mm-hmm. It was so obvious, you know, plot rails that was put up there. And it's like, because the thing is, they're debating initially about what to do, and their priority is to deal with the commission. And yes, it should be to deal with the commission. It really shouldn't be to deal with this kid. But then it's of course they have to set up this whole thing where it's like, we're one big happy Umbrella Academy family. And it's just I didn't feel like it was earned. And in addition, I mean, you have all this stuff going on with Sissy and Harlan, which have been consistently the least interesting thing about this entire show in season two. So on top of that, it's just no good. And I'm just, you know, generally like baffled. Oh yeah, the one thing I will say that I did like was at least they killed off Carl. That guy got on my nerves, and I'm glad he's dead. My only regret is at least they didn't give Sissy some interesting thing to do by actually having her shoot him. Like if she had actually chosen to shoot him, that would have been something. But no, it was one of those things of, oh, I'm going to grab your gun and, you know, I'm going to shoot. And then this whole bullet ricochets and it's an accident. And I'm like, oh my God, you had a dramatic moment, which could have been done to have make anything more interesting than it was. And then you just completely ruin it with that. So yeah, I'm kind of with Jeff on this. It's thumbs down.
You mind if I say something, Steve?
Well, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like you said, the whole happy family thing coming together again, it should have, like, that was so ham-fistedly played out. They should have either just said no, and then it just didn't happen. She goes off on her own. Or they should have all come together and agreed, like, part of the problem is Vanya was always isolated, and we all just say yes immediately and go help her.
There should have been a conversation with the family about what to do about Vanya, and it just never worked out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the only way to redeem Harlan and Sissy was to make them come with her.
Yeah.
That would have been something, but at least have been fun to watch, because it wouldn't have worked and it would have tragically self-destructed, but at least it would make it interesting. Go ahead, Nemesis.
Okay. Because this is sloppy spoilers, I'm going to talk about some stuff that's kind of been mentioned, but also some stuff for the comic books. And Steve, step in and correct me if I get anything wrong, okay?
Sure.
Okay, so one of the problems I see going forward is that we have now reached George R. R. Martin territory, where we're at the end of the written material. You know?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So this next season is going to be whatever they want to do, and it's going to be, you know, and the guy who wrote Umbrella Academy is still planning on writing, you know, that which shall not be named until we get to it at the end of this podcast. So there's that. But the thing, you know, very early in this season, I talked about how it's my theory that if you wanted to, you could set up the Umbrella Academy members as the Seven Seals of the Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And they alluded to something this season. There was a scene that we skipped over. It was a very small scene when Klaus died. and he meets the little girl in the afterlife, that was God. And in the comics, all of these people were created through Immaculate Conception by God. So all of these characters, they weren't the progenitor. They don't have a grandfather or anything. They were conceived and put there by God. So God put these people on there for a reason. You know,
well, it would certainly make a certain reveal later in the episode less awkward.
Yeah. Hmm. So, which is why, you know, I think the Seven Seals Apocalypse is a possibility. But at the same time, okay, so there's all that high-level stuff and we're writing, and we've got the problem where we've reached the end of the written material, and so what we get on screen and what we eventually get, maybe, you know, George R. R. Martin, maybe in like 21, 27, we'll get the end of Game of Thrones, you know, could be completely different. But the other problem is with Vanya in particular and her abilities. They showed this thing happening. They obviously, I hope, had it planned to be part of this season finale and part of this kid, but they just let it go. So they gave us this one scene with Vanya saving him. We did see some light go from Vanya into this kid, and then we didn't see anything happen after that. We didn't see any tangible effects on Vanya. We didn't really see it affect the kid too much. I think we saw a couple things here and there, but we didn't explore that at all. So they just leave these threads hanging, and that's why I brought up the scene where Klaus went, you know, to the afterlife and met God. He met that little girl. They just threw that in there and then let it hang. And it's like, and that is one of the big problems I have with this show. And that's why I brought up both of those episodes, because both of those scenes, because it ties back to the problem with the show as a whole, which is, I don't think the writers really know where they want to go and what they want to do. And they don't have any more written material. And I think that is a problem, because now even the written material that they could, you know, crib off of, that they could cheat off of to try and get some idea where the plot and stuff would go, that's even gone. So now they have to carry book three, which we'll talk about at the end of this podcast, forward on their own. And I'm very concerned about that, because they keep leaving these big details out there. They keep throwing these matzo balls out there, and they're just hitting the floor and sitting there. We're not doing anything with them. And that is really sad and disturbing for me. And that's really what I got out of all this, which was, this whole last episode seemed to be, we've run out of story to tell, so hey, wouldn't it be cool to have the Commission fight the Umbrella Academy, and oh yeah, we'll bring in something with Harlan and we'll just go with that.
And it's, they use the weirdness to justify it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And oh, by the way, and we're going to reveal a brand new plot twist with Lila, who nobody cares about and nobody really wants to see her again anyway. And the Commission, and for all we know, you know, with the way the series ended, how would Lila be involved in that anyway? You know, so why did they even throw that matzo ball out there? So there's all these things just being thrown out there and trying to see what's going to stick against the wall. It's almost like they're saying, let's throw all these different concepts out and see who gets the most tweets on Twitter, and we'll run with that going forward.
Well, that's a perfect transition into the next big whatever, because I already know what we're all going to say, because I know we all feel the same way. But anyway, so Lila and the Handler show up trying to go to war, trying to take out the people that were, you know, responsible for all the deaths of those ages, which is technically five. But of course, you know, the Handler is just doing that thing she does. She's like a living double cross. Like, if you're dealing with her, she's double crossing. Like, I don't even know why, you know, there's even any kind of conversation. So all these agents show up in the field, and so they're not really a match for them, but they try. And then what happens is White Violin, your Light Phoenix, whatever you want to call her, Vanya shows up and just takes them all out with just like one big whoosh. Also, Diego can stop bullets now. Is that the thing? Because if he can stop bullets, that changes everything retroactively. If that was always part of his capabilities, that he could stop bullets, you know, I thought it was some type of telekinesis with his knife or whatever, but you're fast enough or you can handle bullets or whatever. I don't know. So Vanya comes out and with one blast takes out everybody except Lila and the handler. And then the next thing we see, I got so mad, I wanted to stop watching. The next thing we see, they don't state it outright, but basically it looks like Lila, number one, obviously she does have powers, but her powers are similar to Rogue's or maybe Mimics from the original X-Men comic way back in the day.
Closer to Mimics, so it I looks would like say. She can,
yeah, so it looks like she can mimic the powers of other people. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, she's like Rogue and Taskmaster. Why? Put together.
First of all, second of all. yeah. I'm like, could she always do that? Did she have to warm up to this? Like, I'm saying this was for a reveal, but was this always a handler's plan? Like, is this why she wanted Lila? Did Lila just find this out? Was she given permission to show this? Just like, what? I'm like, so I don't know. So give me your thoughts on that whole sequence, because I just very briefly what I thought about it was like, I think what Nemesis said, I think we're going to throw some stuff out there just to kind of mess with the audience's head and just to, you know, do some different twists and turns. But I was like, oh, if I cared about Vanya, that scene might have had some kind of impact, but it didn't. If I cared about Diego, that scene might have had some kind of impact, but that retroactively changes how stupid he's been if he can do that. And then Lila is just like this whole other thing. And I'm like, I thought, you know, I've noticed lately that all the people that I want to die never die. And all the people that I wish would survive, those are the ones that kill. I'm like, So anyway, let me hear your thoughts. Start with Steve.
Oh my God, what an absolute waste. And you can tell, the one thing that kind of came to me is that you can tell that these people just threw together things for plot convenience because they needed these abilities to be there. The thing with Lila is, this mimic ability, okay, is it cool? Yes, but it comes out of nowhere starting off. There's no foreshadowing to this. She just suddenly is able to do this. And what makes it worse is that not only does she have the ability to do this, she somehow knows exactly what all of the other ones can do, even those the ones she has never met. And also, she has the same level of control as the Umbrella Academy, who have been using these powers all their lives. And Lila can suddenly is just as good as them because of plot convenience. BS. Absolute nonsense. Do not buy that at all. It's absolutely forced. It makes no sense. And it's one of those things where you can see that the writers just, you know, were looking for anything to write themselves out of a paper bag. And that's what they came up with. What a disappointment. The business with with all the suits getting taken down. Okay, you have a nice, big moment for Vanya, but again, we don't care because it's Vanya and she's the bomb when she needs to be the bomb. And when she's not the bomb, she's not the bomb. So yeah, this was a moment when she needs to be the bomb. It's visually impressive. That's nice. With Diego, I was just like, are you freaking kidding me? Where has this been the entire time? And why did you not use this before? So you're telling me the entire time when you're fighting the two Swedes and, you know, you're up against the wall, you didn't use this ability? You couldn't have redirected them against the wall or done something? You had this in your arsenal the entire time and you didn't throw this out there. And now you don't give a reason for why you haven't used this ability up until now. Utterly shoddy writing the whole way through. It's all forced. It's all poorly written. The execution is terrible, and it really looks like a desperation move to try to introduce some conflict and tension to a story that otherwise would have none. What a disappointment.
So well said. Go ahead, Nemesis.
Yeah, I would add to what Steve said. I agree with what he was saying. I would say the biggest problem with this whole series is that all of the characters are nerfed until they don't need to be nerfed. So at the beginning, at the very beginning of this season, that time when, you know, during the apocalypse, when we see the Umbrella Academy fighting the Russian soldiers, they look like one of the best X-Men teams I've ever seen. They look incredibly dangerous and powerful, and you never saw that again the whole season until all of a sudden they're doing stuff that we didn't even see in that scene at the end of the season. So it's like, what is their power set? You know, and then from a pure writing standpoint, you know, the last thing I'm just going to say, because this is all I would really want to add to what Steve said, is from the writing code standpoint with Lila, you know, there are times when she fought, like she fought five at one point and was able to be in one place, another place. Maybe that was their way of foreshadowing, but it was really piss poor. And if they had given us a little bit more, so we're like, there is something else going on with Lila, and we're like, she's nerfing herself and doing one of the best jobs, like making herself look weak that we've ever seen, it would have heightened the anticipation through the whole season and made us care about Lila. We'd have been like, you evil bitch, what the hell are you doing? You
know? I will add one more point, which I just remembered, which is part of the problem with Lila is her abilities are not mapped out and clearly defined. The only thing we know about her limitations at all is that apparently they say that she can only use one at a time. Well, we don't know for sure even of that. They don't show how the power works. They don't show, like, is it based on range? Does she have to be in the vicinity of them? Does she have to have just met them? Did she have to have touched them? I mean, something that shows why, you know, how her powers function. But we don't even get that. And so that makes it even more contrived.
Yeah. But if they had just shown us something, like a small flash of light during that fight in the warehouse or something, where we were like, wait a minute, did Lila do that? You know, we would have had anticipation building, but instead they just sprung on us all of a sudden with all this. And not only does she have this ability to copy powers, she, like I said, she also seems to have this Taskmaster ability where she could take on fighting styles of people, you know? So you combine those two. I mean, she's suddenly gone from, you know,
she's gone the, Super Saiyan.
Yeah, exactly. It's like all of a sudden you're like, who the hell is going to stop her? You know, so. So, yeah, it's from a writing standpoint, though, I really have to say, it's like, if this is what you wanted to do with her, if this was your big reveal, you should have, you know, given us a little bit of leg, give us some ankle, you know, during the season so that we're anticipating the big reveal at the end because we're like, oh, yeah, I like what I'm seeing there. What's going on? You know, bring it, bring it. But we didn't get any of that. And then all of a sudden it's just like, and bam, here she is. And we're like, yeah, okay, whatever. So.
Right. Go ahead, Bracey.
I don't think Lila copies fighting styles. We've seen in a flashback that she is incredibly highly trained. I think she's just a good fighter. That's why she's able to hang against Allison and Five in a physical confrontation. The copy power ends up being weird because I can't help but agree with Nemesis that we only got that one instance. We only got that one instance where we saw her using Five's power, but that wasn't enough. That just made us like, hey, you know, something weird's going on. Like you said, there was no flash, or if you weren't going to do a flash, you should have had it like the camera look like, you know, Five took his eyes off her, so you didn't see the flash. But she's teleporting around without any sort of flash, which she doesn't do later on. Just speculating, her power almost seems to be contingent upon her seeing somebody use the power. This might not be the case because, again, the powers are poorly defined. And in fact, a lot of the characters in the show, their powers are rather poorly defined. I even went so far as to look up online. To try and find some information on what exactly Vanya's powers are, and I could not find anything definitive or satisfactory. And that goes for most of them. Like, you know, Five and Luther is very easy, but again, as Nemesis said, when you watch the apocalypse scenario, later on this episode, they all get taken out by bullets. But in the apocalypse scenario, Luther takes a hit from, like, an exploding shell in the back. And shrugs that off. So, like, you know, is it, can he be penetrated by bullets or not? And if he can't, you know, why can just a really big guy knock him out when he threw a fight later? Or like, yeah, no, it doesn't add up. Just doesn't add up. You know, why wasn't Ben summoning monsters the whole time in ghost form or not, if he could do that even though he was dead now? There's just, it's all very, very poorly defined, which is unfortunate, because that kind of stuff does matter. So it doesn't work for us because, like, as you guys said, like, there's not a buildup. We should have seen some scenes like, yeah, maybe her and Diego had like a little knife throwing contest in the dentist's office. That would have been cool. Like, she picks up something heavier than somebody expected her to when, like, Luthor's around. Just little things like that. Maybe she's suddenly persuasive, like when she meets Allison, like she persuades some guy to do something for her. You know, just little things like that, little well-built-in little foreshadows, but we don't get any of that. So this comes out of left field. Just like, let's talk about the other one, Diego. Okay, my thing about Diego is I think what he does, because we've seen him manipulate the speed and trajectory of the knives he throws. So I think that's what he can do. I think he can manipulate the kinetic energy of a moving object, a small moving object. That's why he uses throwing knives. That's why I don't think he's telekinetic and, you know, Swedes all across the place when they get in the hallway fight. But with that said, him stopping the bullets Neo style, and then, you know, he's having to redirect the kinetic energy, because he doesn't throw them right back at the source. He throws them over there, and they blow up the tank on the farm. So apparently it was a strain to, like, grab all this kinetic energy, and then he had to move it. But if he could do that, why were the Swedes ever a threat? When they attacked him in the asylum, he could have just, like, yeah, let me stop all these bullets and have them go hit the wall over here. So like you said, DT, retroactively, it changes everything, and it just doesn't work because of that. And once again, we see Vanya is the most powerful thing in the world until she isn't. And because we don't know how...
No, go ahead. You can finish.
Oh, okay. And because the powers are never... I don't think that the powers are ever going to be defined. I don't think the powers... The writers want to contain themselves that way. Just given the way Vanya is written and a lot of other characters are written, I think they're always going to want to have some sort of out. And it's a very old comic book trope. Like, and this is from like the 60s and whatnot. Like, you know, powers can do whatever we can say they can do just to move things around. And but you know, we're far more sophisticated than that. We're a modern audience, whether it's a comic book reader or somebody watching a show, just won't accept that sort of thing anymore.
So that's a good segue into the next sequence, which is a bit of a mixed bag. I liked it, and I was kind of thrilled by it, but it was another one of those awfully convenient kind of developments. So let's go over the little quirky details. Quirky details is we find it seems that the handler's ultimate plan or penultimate plan or off to the side plan, or this is my side husband with Diet Pepsi plan. I don't know. Anyway, seem like what she's doing is she's trying to do the same thing that Hargreaves did, except she keeps trying to allude to the fact that maybe the kids she's gathering, that she really cares about them, or they're going to love her back, or the kind of family they're going to be is a real family. Except, like we talked about before, she's never been anything but callous and shallow and evil. So it doesn't really carry any weight. We're just like, no, you know. So maybe she's always been power hungry, but her plans have been to imitate what she saw in other people. So first she's trying to take over the commission and everything, which she kind of did. But now she's trying to imitate Hargreaves, and she's trying to put together her own Umbrella Academy, as it were. And so she's going to be Harlan's new mommy. And so she's collecting the new children and blah, blah, blah. And then they also find out that Lila is one of them, a special child born on October 1st, 1989, and I didn't like that either. And then Lila confronts Five about the murder of her parents, and he confesses to doing it, but it was under orders, and the handler came on that job, and that was something she never did. But the handler was trying to collect Lila because guess what? We just found out Lila can do. So again, she's, you know, two-fifths into making her own little Umbrella Academy, I guess. And then all of a sudden, Diego and Lila have a moment where it looks like Diego is able to talk the evil out of Lila or talk the hurt out of her. She looks like she's beginning to switch sides. And maybe she thinks now that the Hargreaves are her real family, and that's where she needs to be, and not with her adopted mom. And just as all that is happening, we get the machine gun mowdown. And the handler kills everybody except Lila. And then she's like, you know, you just need to get over it, and we're just going to be a happy family. And that has, she has no emotional weight. I mean, she is literally less interesting emotionally than a Terminator. I kid you not. And so then we get a flashback to Five remembering that Hargreaves, the reason you've always had problems with your powers is because you keep trying to jump decades. He said, try to jump seconds, not decades. Maybe you're biting off a little more than you can chew, which comes in awfully conveniently handily right here. Because they're all dead, and the handler shoots Five as well when Lila looks like she's gone over to the Hargreaves side of the force. And then Five is somehow still barely alive, and then he has enough in him to go back enough seconds to rewind the massacre that we just saw, which we kind of knew was going to happen. Because they can't just kill everybody. But so the Swede shows up, and instead of him killing everybody, which is probably his original plan, he ends up killing the handler and then realizes that that's really all he needed to do to avenge his brothers. And then Vanya can very conveniently take all traces of her power from Harlan. Now, after all that, I felt just like Nemesis last clip. I'm like, I'm confused now.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. So, I mean, it's like, you know, it felt a little bit like when Thanos used the Time Stone to rewind and kill Vision. And because he didn't do it the first time, so he just rewound everything and kind of got what he wanted. Except that was a little bit more linear in plot logic. So you could watch that and understand what was happening. When you watch this, it's like, you know, it's like, are you trying to redeem Lila? Are you trying to tell her the truth? She changed her mind. Diego's heartfelt connection with her won, but the handler never cared about it anyway, but the handler shoots her, but now everybody's got to die. Like, you know, so I'm like, what was the original timeline? What was supposed to happen here? So whatever kind of sense you made of all that, I definitely want to hear it. Start with Steve.
Yeah, it really seemed to me like they were trying to show that Five's powers go beyond just teleportation and time travel, that he can actually somehow manipulate the fabric of time to a certain extent. So it's almost like he's a time warper, like a reality warper to a certain extent. And now he's just discovered like how to do this. And this was the thing that he was trying to figure out the whole season. And that's why they do the flashback to Hargreaves talking to him in the club. So it looks like that basically what ended up happening is that it probably was originally the way that they showed it. But because Five had the power to roll back time, you know, he essentially rewound it. And then we get a new time track that we didn't have before. So that's kind of what my guess is. As far as the scene itself, I generally thought it was mostly okay, but again, it's like the handler is kind of like the Joker now. you know, she just, it's just, you know, you don't want to see her. And once you see her, you kind of groan because you're tired of seeing her and she doesn't, you know, really do anything. You know, this whole business with her and Lila, you, mommy, you, why did you do make me do this? And it's just sort of like, you know that she's a psychopath. You should by now know that she's a psychopath. That's, I mean, right. Because she's wearing it on her sleeve. And so it's just like, okay, I'm just kind of like, it just kind of got to the point where I reached the point where, okay, this doesn't make sense and this doesn't make sense, but you know what? I don't care. It's over. So that's kind of how I felt about a lot of it. I'm like, okay, I'm willing to kind of overlook this thing. Particularly like when you bring in the Swede and then the Swede is fine with killing the handler, which, I mean, you know, okay, I cheered at that. But then after that, it's like, yeah, I'm just going to let you guys go because of reasons, I guess. But I was just like, you know what? I don't care. It's over. I don't want to see this resolved. Just go away now. I'm done.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bracey.
Yeah, the first thing that bugs me about this whole scene, the overarching thing that bugs me is it's all 100% predictable. It's not like the exciting moment we got with Hargreaves where he reveals he's an alien creature. No, you knew exactly how this was going to go on. Like, oh, they're going to talk down Lila as soon as, you know, she's surrounded, she's outnumbered, there's nothing really she can do. You know, all their powers combined against hers. So, of course, Diego's going to reach out. He's actually got feelings for her. Yeah, you see all this coming. And then when the handler steps in, like, oh, she mows them all down. Well, she mows them all down. What's going to happen? Five is still alive. He's going to rewind time. It's all going to be fine. And we've set up earlier that the Swede's going to come in and kill her. We know all of this well in advance. It's all just right there to read. The second thing I don't like about this scene is, moments ago, while everybody was busy fighting her daughter, fighting Lila, what was the handler doing? She was trying to collect Harlan. And very conveniently, at the moment when the Umbrella Academy is at their most vulnerable, nobody's paying attention to anything but Lila and Diego, all of a sudden she decided that's the time to stop messing with Harlan. I'll figure out Harlan in a minute. My spider sense is tingling and I need to go run over here and kill everybody. I've got the moment to kill everybody. So I really, really loathe that sort of plot convenience. That's just so lazy. I cannot stand it. You know, give not just characters actions that matter, that make sense. The plot action needs to make sense. It should never just be that convenient. It was like when we were discussing the ending of The Boys, when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, when the team is getting their butt kicked by Stormfront, all of a sudden, boom, here comes Maeve. It's a great moment. Love seeing Maeve kick the crap out of this evil bitch. But, you know, if we had no idea she was coming or why or how, or she even knew where they were at, how they got there. So, again, it's that sort of thing. Didn't like that. And, you know, there's just really not much more to say about it. It's just so dreadfully predictable and convenient. And that just makes it the greatest sin of all in entertainment. Boring.
Boring. Go ahead, Nemesis.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, DT, in that this was confusing as all hell. And to me, you know, there's two things I can say on this. One is from a writing standpoint, and then I'm going to go to the comic, you know, my comic fan. I'm put that hat on. From a writing standpoint, at the end of 9+ hours of television, the time to add new plot points, new things that are motivations for your characters, add them, do exposition, and then wrap them all up is not the last 15 minutes of 9+ hours of television. You know? Maybe I am old and stuck in my ways, but I'm pretty sure that is not the way to produce and write anything. You know, it's like writing a novel and suddenly having a brand new character in the last page, you know, and his whole story takes place on the last page. It's like, I don't think it's going to be very satisfying for a lot of people. From a comic standpoint, you know, what Jeff said is absolutely right. It was predictable. And to me, it's even more predictable because I'm watching this. And to me, the Umbrella Academy is X-Men in another name. You know, they've got different things going on. But, you know, so I watched this and I watched the Handler and I'm like, I've seen this before. I've seen it to a certain extent in the Hellfire Club. I saw it in Uncanny X-Men when Emma Frost started a different academy to rival Charles Xavier's and was trying to pull off people because she had an ego and wanted to do things. She did the same thing in Ultimate X-Men. You know, I've seen the stuff with the Swede coming in. I mean, that was reminiscent of like a Bishop at the end of Days of Future Past or Cable or something like that. I mean, all of this stuff has definite ties to other things I've seen in X-Men stories. You know, and if it was just one or two things, it would be one thing. But when it's everything I'm seeing seems to be lifted somehow from X-Men, I start to go, you know? So, you know, and maybe it's just coincidence. Maybe I've read too much X-Men and seen too much X-Men. And so because the similarities are there, I'm seeing it all. But I don't think I am, especially, you know, what really hit on this for me was when you were talking about the fact that, you know, she's trying to bring in, create this whole new family and do this rival to the Umbrella Academy or have her own group of mutants under her power. I was like, that's straight out of, you know, certain stories of the Hellfire Club. And like I said, stories.
The Brotherhood.
Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, Uncanny X-Men stuff with Emma Frost. I forget what her academy was called.
The Massachusetts Academy.
Yeah. You know, she's done that multiple times and other people have done that. You know, so we're seeing all of that, and it's like, yeah, you know, maybe you're putting a new twist on it. Maybe you came by this naturally, but after a while, you know, I have to start going, yeah, this doesn't feel new. It doesn't feel original, and I think I've seen this done and done better, you know, which then really is not a good place to be for a show and for a writer, because at that point, that's when you become boring, like you were saying.
Absolutely. Now, we're running short on time, so we're going to have to deal with the big kahuna. But very briefly, I want to mention just a few things. Luther gives Allison mouth-to-mouth to stop her from suffocating. And it turns out, one of these days, I'm going to understand these people's obsession with sibling love. It's disgusting. Okay, so Sissy and Harlan off to start a new life and blah, 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 blah. And why did they get clear for Carl's death? The police are just gonna just ignore all that. Oh, he's just magically dead with a bullet in his sternum. Okay, yeah. Well, you can go ahead on with your kid, no problem. You know, and like I said, they should have kept him together and brought him back to the present. That would have been much more interesting. What everybody would have done with that would at least make it worth watching or whatever. And like we talked about the music and everything, AJ Carmichael should have come bursting out of the Handler like an alien, but they missed that opportunity.
So waiting for that.
Yeah, I was like, that has to be what happens, but apparently not. So, but with the time travel use on this show, nobody's really dead. So I'm sure we'll see J. Carmichael again. So we got to talk about the big kahuna. And the big kahuna is that when they get back to 2019, it's like a Back to the Future situation. A whole new timeline has been created. And so Hargreaves kind of took my idea about Ray, kind of. It's a bit of a variation on a theme. But what happened to Hargreaves in 63 by meeting his children at that point in time made him go in different directions forward in time. And now we find out there is not, nor has there ever been, an Umbrella Academy. Now it's the Sparrow Academy. And now Ben's alive. And now he's like the Cyclops of the new kids. I was like, whoa. And then we see the new kids. We kind of see him in shadow. We see him a little bit briefly. So we have to wonder, is this different versions of the heroes that we know, or are these new kids all together? But this is what I mean when I said somebody had to capitalize on all this happening in 63 would have to change how 2019 unfolds. Mm-hmm. Except instead of it being Ray, or we don't know that, Ray might show up next season, but it has been Harcreeves, and now he's got a whole, he's either got different kids, whole different. And I like it when you said we are now in Martin territory. They're coming up with some stuff. And let's talk about this whole thing. But I have to say, first of all, overall, I really liked it. And the reason I liked it was because number one, it's something we've seen before, but something about this twist was refreshing to me. I think maybe because of Ben. I think because we said goodbye to the character and we were going to say goodbye to the actor. And I guess we thought that was it. And now we're like, he's actually getting what he deserves, which is another chance at corporeal life. I really like that for some reason. So maybe that's why it didn't bother me. If you know me at all, you know I love alternate universe anything. So if this is a different set of the same kids, I already love it. Even if they're lame. I love it. I just love AU stuff. But for once, we see some real consequences to all the time tinkering that they were doing. Because up until this point, they just got really kind of willy-nilly with it. Like, we just do whatever back here in 61, 62, 63. Because whatever. But now it's like, no. Everything's different now. It's because of Hargreaves, of all people. And I know it's a form of a reset, but the reason it doesn't bother me at this point is because we don't know where it's going. If they kill all these new kids in the first episode of season three, then yeah, I'm going to get mad. I ain't going to like that. But overall, I really did like this ending, even if it's cheesy, even if it's predictable, whatever. I still liked it because there's mystery there. There's enough challenge there. There's enough opportunity there to give us some really good stories. But I can already tell the problem is having, 15 people on screen at a time, having two sets of cast of five members each is probably not going to last long, I'm sad to say. So I hope they don't hurry up and get rid of the new kids on the block. I kind of feel like that's what they're going to do, and I'm not going to lie. Maybe they'll let them branch out into individual stories so it won't be so expensive to have everybody on screen at once. That's kind of the way I'm hoping we're going. Because anybody that knows me knows I love the Crime Syndicate, and I love the Justice Lords, and I love Gods Among Us. So this is a chance to do that with Umbrella Academy / Sparrow Academy. So I really liked it. So let me hear your thoughts. Start with Bracey.
Boy, I hope you're right, because that was not my takeaway at all. I'm getting ready to jump on it. I found the twist, as you mentioned, once again, predictable. You muck with the time stream, things happen. I did find one thing interesting about it. The last time we see Harlan, he's manipulating a toy bird. And as you recall, I mentioned that thing, like, what if Vanya's messing with Harlan ended up spawning the superhumans in the future? And if he's playing with his toy bird, is this toy bird a sparrow? And that's where we get the Sparrow Academy. That can make things interesting for me. I really didn't like seeing Ben with the emo hair. Man, I hate the emo hair. That's just an aesthetic choice. I'm going to blame Spider-Man 3 on that. I didn't like Peter Parker with emo hair. So it can be interesting. It can be well done. I'm hoping it is. But for me, this ending ended up being kind of anticlimactic and underwhelming. I was expecting some sort of change. But, for an aversion of the an apocalypse, it didn't feel all that apocalyptic to me. And maybe it's because, the last time around, they literally destroyed the Earth. Maybe my expectations were just set too high after all that. And I don't know if they could have actually done it any other way. Either the Cuban Missile Crisis and, JFK explodes in your face, or it doesn't. And they averted that. So there was that. But it just, and it did feel like a reset. And that was a, I get what you're saying. It's a reset, and it's not a reset because you've got a whole new potential out of it. But I'm just not sold on it yet. So I guess I got to wait till next season to see.
Well, it was just a quick flash, so we don't have enough information to really draw solid conclusions. That's what I'm saying. So that's what I mean. I'm cautiously optimistic. But mm-hmm. We are definitely going to have to see what they do with it. I mean, no way around that.
But clearly something...
Go ahead.
Hargreaves at least did remember them from the past in the 60s, so we know this alternate timeline is still connected to what they just experienced.
That's right, but he's also an alien, and we have no idea about what his powers are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be the main question that needs to be answered as well. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I think I'm generally closer to DT's position on this. I think that it is promising, but it really kind of depends on how it plays out. It seems like they kind of play a little bit Back to the Future Part 2 in a sense, at least in the sense that, okay, we go back in the past and we make this change, and so we end up on this alternate time track, and then, you know, maybe something different has gone wrong, and then we have to figure out what that is, and then we have to go back and we have to change it. It'll probably be something like that. Part of the problem is that they couldn't reset it to the point where it was at the end of season one, because then you've got the world ending. So yeah. How do you deal with that? So an alternate universe scenario, I think, is at least reasonable as far as that goes. I didn't really have a problem with that. I am kind of glad that I was kind of half right, because my original thought was, okay, that Hargreaves was going to decide, okay, I'm not going to make the Umbrella Academy because I've seen, you know, how toxic and awful my kids are. And that kind of happened, and it kind of didn't. Like, okay, they're the Umbrella Academy. They're just different kids, and it's not called the Umbrella Academy. I'm like, okay, I can kind of go with that. But as far as everything else, it really depends on the execution. It depends on how fleshed out and well-developed these kids are, whether they can succeed in making me care about them. I'm going to actually kind of throw in a video game reference to a game I really am into, called Trails of Cold Steel, where the first two games, you're kind of used to this original group of characters, and you get to know them, and you really like them. And then you deal with the leader of the original group having to lead a new team of younger kids. And then you have to get to know all of them. And then, you know, and then they manage to succeed in making you care about those characters in the same way. I'm hoping that happens here. But given how wonky this season has been, am I confident that'll happen? Not really. But I'm hoping they'll pull it off somehow. So I would say it's interesting. They're going to have to make it work, and they're going to have to find a way to make it less predictable, because this episode particularly was very much by the numbers, and that's something that Umbrella Academy should not be. Mm-hmm. So I would say I am cautiously optimistic, but I'm hoping we don't get execution like we've seen this season.
Just to throw an idea out there from the writer's code. You know what would really shake things up is if they have one of the new group kill one of the original group and it sticks.
Yeah,
so my vote there for Diego. Just kill. That would at least be interesting. Like, the first scene is they just take Diego out and he doesn't come back. And so now we have new Diego for better or for worse.
That you know would what? Be I'd, cool. You know what I'd like to see? Now that you mentioned, I like the fact that Ben is there because he's the only member of the kids that Hargreaves didn't meet, so he didn't know not to take Ben in. But then these are all a bunch of new kids, and because he met his toxic family in the past, these kids are all wildly successful. They're like the X-Men. They're like the best, most awesome family-oriented team ever.
Yeah. Like Fantastic Four awesome.
Yeah, it'd be great like that. Opposite.
Go ahead, Nemesis.
Yeah, Jeff just hit on what I was going to say. So what I took away from this small clip was that, you know, one of the things Hargreaves was very clear on when he met all of them, except for Ben, he doesn't know Ben existed, or he doesn't know what Ben looked like, was that all of these people, except for five, were completely unworthy of being associated with him. So I can't see that Hargreaves creating a Sparrow Academy with the same players. So I think these kids are definitely new kids. And, all right, this is what I would hope they're doing. Hey, Amazon or Netflix, pay attention. This is me pitching to write the next season of Umbrella Academy. I would love to see that this version, this Sparrow Academy, is the Sentinel program. They are the people that keep control of superpowered people in this world. And they do it well, and they do it ruthlessly, all on Hargreaves' vision based on what he experienced when the Umbrella Academy goes back. And this whole season is Umbrella Academy on the run for their lives from their replacements. And eventually the Umbrella Academy has to come to terms with the fact that we're a bunch of screw-ups. And are we the good guys? Do we deserve to win here?
No.
Or should we let fate and time be and accept that we screwed it all up and we need to step aside?
Oh, man, love this idea.
That's what the next season should be, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, that would definitely be interesting, especially if they have to deal with the moral argument of, do we take ourselves out of the mix because we keep causing problems? If they had had the guts to do what they needed to do, the answer to that question is Vanya and Five. Because both of them need to go if you want the problems to stop. Time travel is always a problem. Yeah. Out of control, Phoenix powers, always the problem.
But But like you all said, it all hinges on that first episode of the new season, because the Hargreaves that emerged from season two of Umbrella Academy is not going to be the same man with the same motivations and everything else as the Hargreaves from season one. You know, he is a changed man. And because of that, his vision for the Umbrella Academy has turned into the Sparrow Academy. And so it cannot be the same. If it is, then this is all of us just wasting our time, really.
Yeah,
that's right. All right, folks, we're going to call it there. Obviously, there's a lot more we could talk about, but that's it for season two of Umbrella Academy. Please let us know what you think. That's why we give you our Twitter handles. We'd love to talk to you on social media. We want you to check out the other podcasts available on United Capes Podcast Network. And we've got a lot of good things coming up, so please continue to download Sloppy Spoilers, because we have some really exciting things we're going to talk about in the next couple episodes, because we're really going to tear into some very meaty subjects, and we'd love to hear what you guys think as well. Thanks so much to my co-host. Thank you so much, Dave.
No problem. Thank you. This was great. I love this.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you for being here, and I'm glad that we got through all this, and I'm looking forward to the next things that we're going to be talking about.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Always a pleasure, man. Always love to talk about these shows, whether it's good or bad.
I also have to say, by the time this comes out, happy holidays and New Year to everybody. Stay safe, everyone, and have a good holiday.
Merry Christmas, people.
Merry Christmas.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we will see you next time on the next episode of Sloppy Spoilers. And we are out.
Cool.
Spoilers.